This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to a special training episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 10th, episode 1253, Good Morning Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning, you never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. And as always, Mary is with us the second Thursday of every month. And boy, do we have a ton to talk about today. Jennifer's off today. She's off doing other things. I don't know. I think she said something about she was mad at me and she's going to ride her pony. So I don't know. I don't know what that was. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But no, we have a lot of good stuff coming up today. We have James Cooler joining us by popular demand. And he's going to be doing a training tip for us, talking about training with layers. And then we have Guy Robertson coming to us from England. And I think Mary just has him on because he has a cool accent.
Yes, that was my only motive.
And then speaking of cool accents, then we go over to Poland. So you have an international show going on today, don't you?
Yes, and let me tell you, coordinating all the time zones it's been a good challenge. It's been a good challenge. So, so I think I have everyone set up right. It's going to work out great. So I thought an international flair this week would be a really good idea.
And you thought of that because since we talked to you last, you made a trip to Poland and competed in a competition over there, and we're all dying to hear about it. So how did it go?
It was really good. It was an interesting and fun trip. I wasn't in the money this time, but I did learn a lot and made a lot of friends over there, some really good connections. So it went well. It went well. I had the toughest horse. I think I got a lot of respect.
Let's tell everybody it was a colt starting competition.
Oh, yes.
Similar to Road to the Horse, right? It was called Considering the Horse.
Yes, it's Considering the Horse, and I was invited over there. They had three trainers, so it was myself, a guy named Marcek from Poland, and then Guy Robertson, one of our guests, over from the UK. So it was definitely an international colt starting competition. We had, I believe we worked with them over 3 days, and, we had a final round with an obstacle course and freestyle, and, different from Road to the Horses, we were working with 3-year-old untrained warm blood fillies. So that was an interesting experience.
A little bigger than you're used to.
Oh, yeah. And I had to pick the tallest one. So that was interesting. I had to about break my leg to get my foot in the stirrup.
You're used to working with the little Mustangs and quarter horses that went about 15-1, 15-2. Well, this guy over 16 hands, he looked big in the pictures.
She was enormous. I know she kind of, her withers were at least eye level with mine and with my eye, eye level with me, and I'm 5'9". And I just looked at her and I thought, well, I don't think I'm going to do my usual jumping up on a bareback. I think we'll just skip that one. Well, I asked for a mounting block beforehand because I knew that this was going to be a big horse. I got this like wooden kind of saddle stand thing to use. And I thought, we'll just, that might be hard to climb up and down. So we just went ahead and did the saddle and I just climbed on and hoped for the best.
Well, now tell me, so what did you find was the difference with the warm bloods? Was there a difference? Did you see a difference compared to what you're used to with the Mustangs or the quarter horses?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to generalize training warm bloods because this was actually the first warm blood I ever started. So I have no frame of reference to know if she was a typical warm blood, if she was different from other horses. I did have someone on Facebook comment when they found out we were doing warm blood. She said, God help you. I was like, okay, good to know.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, but I did note differences between this particular filly and horses that I'm used to working. She very short attention span. She wanted you to get it over with and get out. If you stayed on something too long, she was done with you. She kind of looked around the place like Doug the dog from the movie Up. She'd just kind of be focused on me. Squirrel for 30 seconds. And then, and actually in my final round, she was hooked on me pretty good. We're going through pretty well. And there were horses that were turned loose in a pen at the end of the arena. And like halfway through my freestyle, one of those horses called out and she just stopped everything and was like, oh, there's a horse there. To that horse. So, you know, I had to kind of really work to get her back and get her listening again. When I first walked up to her, they weren't halter trained, but I could tell people had handled her. I could tell she'd been touched. So she wasn't completely wild. So I felt like she was going to let me approach her. And I walked up to her shoulder to put my hand on her neck. And first thing she does was strike out at me. And that turned out to be her favorite move. She did that quite often. So we, you know, had to work through that.
With her front feet, she was striking out.
Yeah. And she wasn't serious about it. But she was letting me know.
Yeah.
She was letting me know she had her bubble. And
from
one
mare to another, just don't push it.
Yes, she was like, don't mess with me. And so breaking through that kind of little barrier that she had was the biggest challenge. But overall, a sweet mare, certainly not an outlaw. You know, sweet mare, she got a really good home afterwards. I really did enjoy working with her. Challenging, but she was fun.
Now, what? So did you have 3 days? Was it like Road to the Horse? You had 3 days and a certain amount of time each day?
There was definitely a schedule. We had our training sessions were a bit longer, which is a challenge in and of itself because, you know, you have to decide, you know, do I use all of this time that I've been given or, you know, is this going to push the horse too much? I gave my mare a lot of break. We were required to take a 10-minute break in the session. So I definitely took every bit of that. Plus, I did a lot of just getting something done and then walking away and leaving her alone. So the time was a bit lengthier. But overall, yeah, a lot of the same ideas. At the end, you know, you had to go out on an obstacle course and show, you know, go through the obstacle course. So a lot of similarities, few differences.
Big difference is you couldn't understand anything the announcer was saying.
Yes.
They could have been talking smack about you the whole time, Mary, and you wouldn't have known.
I know. Don't think. Yeah, I wasn't thinking that. They told us, they said the audience is going to count you down for the first session, and they were counting. But it wasn't 10, 9, 8. So I'm like, is it now? No, it's now. Is it now? You know? But luckily, you know, there were some very good English speakers there because 2/3 of their competitors were native English speakers. So they did translate for us.
Okay, so
we got through that okay. Yeah.
Well, that's good. At least you had some idea of what was going on, right?
Yeah.
And your hosts, who we're going to talk to later on in the show today, speak English, right? So you had them at least guiding you.
Yes, for sure. I would say the biggest challenge with, you know, when I would talk about my training session after each go, you know, they'd come and give me a microphone and ask how it would go. You know, I don't know if you know this, but I like to talk a little bit.
Just a little.
Yeah, I get a little lengthy. And when you're trying to filter that through a translator and you have to hear that translator say everything you just said, you realize, oh, I probably wouldn't have
talked too damn much.
So I could tell them looking at me like, I have to remember all this. Please stop talking. One of our guests later on the show was telling me a story. I'm not sure if I'll get. But I think Ray Hunt was in Europe doing a demo, a demonstration or a clinic or something. And I think he was in Italy and they had a translator, and Ray told a joke, but the joke was not going to translate well in Italian. It was some sort of play on words. So it just wasn't going to make sense when you translated it. So the translator, instead of pointing that out, just, you know, was translating. And then he told the audience in Italian, he said, okay, in 5 seconds, I want you all to laugh. So they did. And so then Ray felt real good. They got his joke and they liked it. And so he was just real nice. He didn't, you know, they just, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
I'm like,
it's
I
hard
wonder
to
if that was
translate jokes. They, most of them don't translate well.
Yeah. You know, if it's a play on words, you know, it's in, you know, how the words are rearranged. So I do wonder if they just said, you know, everyone just smile and nod, you know, at what, listen to, you know, act like you're interested.
Okay. So now you got to do some sightseeing while you were there too. So I saw some pictures of you out and about.
Yeah. The place where it was held was really cool and a bit surreal. It's in this town right near the Czech border. And it's kind of it's in the mountains. It's nestled in the mountains, sort of a big ski resort area and, you know, a big hiking area. But the venue for the actual competition was this place called Western City. So it is all Western, like the American Wild West. They had Texas flags, American flags. They did shows where they had these cowboys come out and shoot each other. And then when one guy would die, the Undertaker would come out and measure him for his coffin. So, you know, I left Texas to come back to Texas, which was very surreal.
I did see the pictures, and you would have guessed that would have been in Phoenix or Texas someplace, right? It did look very Arizona, Texas. It was kind of neat. And obviously, they celebrate our West a little bit over there, which was kind of cool. Now, how about the food?
The food was really good, although I did get made fun of a lot because I did order an abundance of pizza.
okay,
the pizza
you were supposed
was
to be
wonderful.
Eating like all kinds of sausage and brats. And
this is what I was told. They're like, oh, you need to try this. It's a, you know, you need to try this. It's Polish. And so I was a good sport and did. But for the most part, I was really into the pizza and French fries, had some schnitzel, you know, had some German food. They had a lot of different, you know, food from different places there. And Aldana's mother, so one of my hosts, her mother cooked for us. And it was, oh my gosh, she's an out of this world cook. So we had, you know, real Polish food over there from her. And it was delicious. But it was so funny because she heard, you know, when I went over there that I liked pizza and hamburgers. And so she made sure to make all that for me. I mentioned that she found out somehow that I really like Coca-Cola. So we came in from working one day and there was Coke in the fridge. So I had a wonderful host. It was really neat.
Now, so did she also, a guy who ended up winning the thing, is going to come on later today, is from England. Did they have fish and chips too?
No, Guy didn't have any fish and chips. I didn't see any on the menu. I had to whip out this I have this really awesome app on my phone. It's Google Translate, but I made sure I downloaded Polish so I didn't need an internet connection when I was out and about in town. And there's this little icon you can press on it and it turns on your camera and you hover it over the menu and it will translate your menu.
Really?
For you. Yes.
What's
now,
that called? Did it work?
It's Google Translate, but it's a feature on Google Translate. And for the most part, it worked. But sometimes it does the translations a little too literally. So when I was in Mexico and I used this app, I was looking over a breakfast menu and it said divorced eggs. So I had to figure out what they meant by divorced eggs. But that was a lifesaver because you don't want to always have to bug the person next to you. Mm. What's this? Okay, what's this?
Right.
You know, and so that was a lifesaver. I was able to translate my menus over there.
That's funny. Well, now then you went off after the competition and you did a couple of clinics, right?
Right. I did one clinic in Western City. So that was kind of a basic clinic, which was really fun. We actually did cow work, not with live cows. I had them cow, you know, I had them work each other like cows. So we did some basic ideas there, a little bit of groundwork. That was a lot of fun. And then I did a more advanced clinic up near Warsaw. At a barn. They do a lot of Western and horsemanship and reining, believe it or not. So that was a lot of fun as well.
Very, very cool. Well, I'm so glad you got to do that. It sounded like a lot of fun. And, you know, who knows you never know who's there, right? You know, who is going to see you and what that's going to lead to next. And I know you do have some other things coming up here in the United States. You're going to be heading to Washington State here very shortly. What's that for?
Yeah, well, so I've just booked that on my calendar. So it's the Central Washington State Fair, and it's up in Yakima, Washington. And they have a 60-foot round pen. They usually book a clinician to go there, and it's 9 days. So I'll be doing 3 performances a day for 9 days. And it's everything. Typically, they'll have someone do everything from, you know, a little liberty routine to occult starting to, you know, whip cracking or performances like that. So I'm going to go up there. I'm going to bring Guthrie, my Sixes colt, and my little Mustang that I owned and rode in the Mustang makeovers named Jax. And so it'll be a little educational, but then we'll also, you know, we'll show some cute tricks and liberty. I think I'm going to do a Garrocha performance in the big arena in the evenings. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm also up in Oregon at that time doing a clinic right before.
So that's a long one. You're going to be there for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm not going to live at home much anymore, I don't think.
That's good. I mean, it's your job, right? You're supposed to be thinking about, yeah. The poor Z-Donk is not going to get any love.
Oh, I know, because she's the one I want to take on these things. So I have to find a way. Well, I've booked something similar on the calendar for next year. We're just wrapping up some details on that. I will announce that shortly. That's really exciting. Early next year. So that is my, I plan to debut her at that event. So stay tuned for that. I'll be adding that to the calendar real soon.
All right. Very good. And then you also have the Triple Threat Clinic coming up in October. Boy. You aren't going to be home much.
No, ever. we've got the Triple Threat Clinic coming up in October. That'll be toward the end of October in Hamilton, Texas. And what's really exciting about that and unique is it's not just me. We've got 2 other clinicians there. We've had both of them on the show in the past. We have Wylene Wilson and Miranda Lyon. And we're each going to be covering a different topic as well as doing demos. It's a fun clinic, a fun venue. There's going to be karaoke. There's going to be, dancing and dinner with the clinicians. So that's coming up. We've come up with a new price deal on that. So that's only going to be $550 for the weekend for 3 clinicians. So I'm really excited about that coming up.
And that's when they can bring their horses to that one or audit both?
Both, okay. Yes. All right. Yes.
And so it's $550 if you bring your horse?
Yes.
Okay. So do you know what the auditor rate is on that one?
Oh, put me on the spot. I believe it is $25 a day.
Okay, so it's normal auditor rates.
I think it's $30 a day, but we do a deal if you do all 4 days.
Okay.
I will have that information.
That's normal auditor rates. That's no big deal. All right. So that is the Triple Threat Clinic. It's coming up when again? Give the dates again and where it's at.
That is going to be in October. It's the 22nd through the 25th. That's at the Circle T in Hamilton, Texas.
Very good. Well, let's do this. Let's we had a request by one of our listeners to have James Cooler back because she had attended a couple of his clinics and really liked James. And of course, James has been on our shows many times. So we thought we'd have him back and actually put him to work this time. So we're making him do our training tip for the month. So coming up right now is James Cooler of Cooler Horsemanship.
How are you doing today, James?
I'm doing very good. I appreciate it. We're down here in South Carolina, and we are very wet. We've been getting a lot of rain the last couple of weeks. So.
That kind of sounds like Texas. I'm surprised it's September, and it's still just incredibly, miserably humid. So I guess it's better than the Northwest, though.
That's right. Never helps to complain anyways.
Yeah. Okay, so I thought you would be a really good choice to come on and discuss a little training with us. And you requested you wanted to talk about training with layers. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, absolutely. I want to say real quick, I do appreciate you guys having me on, and it's always fun to chit chat with you and Glenn. And
Minute. We had nothing to do with it. It was actually a listener of ours who apparently thinks you're the next thing to God and wanted you on. So it had nothing to do with us, James.
Well, I've got one fan out there.
Yeah, so that's right. Good. You do. And yeah. She wrote to us and said, you've got to get James back on. So here you are. No, we love having you on. It's all good.
No, I really appreciate it. But to me, I guess, training with layers, and kind of goes hand in hand. It's more of a conceptual thing. It's not necessarily a hands-on technique or an individual technique that you would use, but it kind of goes hand in hand in my mind with another saying that I use a lot, which is every session has a progression. And for me, what that means is, number one, when I'm starting out with a horse, the earlier stages of my sessions are going to have just a lower level of expectation, and I'm trying to build on the quality of that expectation as I progress, whether it's a trailer loading or a colt starting, or you're working on a more advanced horse, let's just say you're developing lead changes or something like that. I'm sort of always trying to say, how am I progressing along in this session with this horse? And I'm not wanting to push them too hard, too fast. Otherwise, you can kind of get yourself in an interesting position. But at the same time, I don't like to feel like I'm losing ground or going backwards. And if I sort of feel like if I keep that in the back of my mind all the time, I'm just really aware of the level of try that I'm getting from my horse, which sort of sets me up to recognize when something might not be the most efficient or the most effective. And that's where layers to me really come into play. And that's really how I've tried to build my program as much as I can to say, okay, I'm not really getting where I wanted to get. Let's just say I'm working on a turnaround with a horse, and rather than try to fix the result with the result, I want to say in my head, how can I slide down, find a layer of an exercise, like maybe, jog in circles at a trot while I'm sort of pushing that shoulder, let's just say, into the circle and helping the horse get a better rhythm and cadence with the front feet crossover, and then take that back to the turnaround or the spin to see maybe if I slid down to that layer and then came back up, to the more finished result, is that going to help that horse out? And that sort of keeps me from feeling like I'm putting too much pressure on a finished result, like I said, which, maybe you're looking at a lead change or a turnaround or just some body control, whatever it is. I'm just really big on trying to understand, hey, if it's not working here, where can I adjust to that can help this horse out with the level of expectation that it can handle? And then, a lot of times once you kind of find that little groove, things start to click, and then the confidence comes up and the level of understanding comes up, and you sort of feel like, okay, I'm back on a progressive track here, which I think any trainer would say, we're always looking for feeling like we're moving forward and not, either getting stale or losing ground with our horse or whatever it is. So I just thought that'd be kind of an interesting little thing to help people, because I find in clinics and lessons that I do, I'm talking about that a lot with folks. We all get stuck somewhere, and we all are trying to learn and grow. And when you get stuck, it's sometimes hard to look outside of the box because you're so focused on what you're trying to achieve or what you're trying to fix. And so I just try to help people and encourage them, as they learn and as they grow in their own horsemanship, understand that, it's kind of a layered process, both in our ability to understand what we're doing and to apply it. And I just think that helps people, including myself, stay a lot more patient and just be more accepting of this is where I'm at and this is how I'm going to get to where I want to go. And so I just thought maybe that'd be a fun thing to chit-chat about. And I don't know if that's something you find yourself working with a good bit or not, but for me that's a big concept that I just feel like pretty much all the time is in play in the back of my head as I'm working on something with a horse.
That's a really, man, that's a great training tip. So I'm already really glad we had you on today. Yes, I totally agree. And it's very timely because this is kind of exactly what I had to go through with my last clinic in Poland. You know, I did two clinics, and one was more of a basic clinic and one was an advanced clinic. You know, now I do these advanced clinics, but I can tell you all the time, most of the time we're working on basic stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's not because I'm looking at someone and saying, oh no, what do you think you're doing? You're not ready to advance. It's never that. It's usually, and this is any horse, any trainer, you'll build on something, for instance, a lead change you mentioned, and then it'll fall apart. And your instinct is to stay in that lead change, like kick him a little harder, shift your weight a little more, maybe get after him a bit. And you'll end up making 20 attempts at a lead change and not getting anywhere. And you've just practiced failing the lead change. And so at the clinic, this last clinic in Poland, we worked on lead changes by teaching the riders to ride straight lines. And so, you know, how's that like a lead change? Most of the horses needed work on just riding from point A to point B. And, you know, pick a spot, look at it, ride to it. Can your horse move out? Can he go relaxed? Is he confident? Are you having to micromanage and steer him all the time? And so when you think about it, so even though none of those horses did one lead change, we worked on lead changes. Because if you think about, you know, a lead change, what's in a lead change? They have to go forward. They have to be straight and balanced. They have to be relaxed. They have to be confident. If they don't have those things correct, then you can't ask for a lead change, you know. And then on the more technical stuff, can you move their shoulders? Can you pick up and get a soft feel when you pick up on the reins? If you needed to slow them down or ask them to stop, how easy would that be for them to do? If you needed to go from a stop to a canter in a couple strides, can you do that? If you can't do things like that, then the lead change is just simply not going to work, because the lead change, if you were to tell me what's a lead change, I might list 1,000 things that the horse does in the lead change that are not the horse goes from one lead to the other. You know, I might say, you know, the horse is in the bridle. He's going forward. He's moving out. He's attentive. He's alert, but he's also relaxed. You know, he stays between my legs. He stays under my hands. If I do ask him to move a body part, he does it. And so when you get all of that, then all of the lead changes is simply switching your legs and letting the horse change leads all on his own. So that, I think that's a really good point you brought up today.
Well, no, and I like the way you explained it as well. You said a couple of things that kind of stood out to me. You know, first of all, it's just good fundamentals. You know, that's another way of looking at it. And in any sport or endeavor, you know, without solid fundamentals, we're going to have a hard time getting to the fancy stuff. And what I like that you said is a lot of times, and I've been there, you kind of get to where you feel like, oh, I'm ready to work on this fancy thing, and then it doesn't click the way you thought it would. Well, you're just going to end up practicing failing, and all you're going to do is build those associations for your horse. And what's interesting is, and I think you might relate to this, you kind of pointed out something similar, is that when you're teaching and you try to, you know, okay, you're helping somebody, and you get a little worried, like, man, I'm going to show them what they need to do, and hopefully it doesn't deflate them too much because they think I'm knocking them down a whole bunch of pegs. Where the reality is, I'm saying, no, I just don't want you to get into a bad pattern of not getting what you want. And then we do that so much that becomes sort of the association the horse has, which can be very hard to fix if that goes on for too long. So yeah, you know, it's just a great thing to kind of always be thinking about in the back of your head. And I think, you know, that's something that separates, you know, as I watch, you know, some of the best in the industry, is really one of the things that they're best at is saying, well, we're not there right now. Let's just slide on back down and work on the things that will help us get there. And they don't look at that as going backwards. They know that's actually going to move me further forward. And I think as anybody, whether it's recreational riders or professional riders, that's a learning process to get very confident about that feeling on the inside. You know, and I try to encourage people to remember that, you know, that we all go through that. And it takes a while to get used to thinking that way, because really that's one of the biggest differences between how a person works and how a horse works. You know, a person, we don't mind working through pain and we don't mind torturing ourselves and doing things thousands and thousands of times. But, you know, I always say horses don't work through pain. As a matter of fact, they work away from pain and they work towards comfort. And you got to know how to organize that so that it all comes together. And you got to just, you know, every horse is going to have a sticky spot. You can get better and better at recognizing it and saying, well, let me pick this fundamental and I'll make that really solid. And it just takes the pressure off, you know, for me. And but I like what you said about, you know, trying to help people not fail at something over and over to where that becomes the pattern.
Exactly. Well, and what something else I think people need to realize too is if you try to show me an advanced maneuver and I tell you something like, you know, and it doesn't work. And I tell you something like, well, you know, can you move your horse's hips over? And a lot of times they'll kind of say, well, yeah, that's kind of like, you know, that's mm-hmm. basic stuff. And they'll try to show me and it won't work. When that mm-hmm. happens, that's not always a sign of you didn't do your job or you weren't clear to your horse or you skipped this step. That just happens. That happens with every single trainer I can think of. You know, I had problems in my turnarounds and my horse just was not stepping over. I could not build speed. It was time for him to step up his game. Could not do it. You know, I just felt like, man, I'm going to have to beat him up to get him to speed up. And of course, I didn't want to do that. And then someone mm-hmm. pointed out, can you yield his hindquarters? I'm like, well, yeah. Well, no, actually, when I went and tried to just push his hindquarters out of the way, I found out that button sort of got stuck in the process. You know, now I had done plenty of this with him the first rides. But so mm-hmm. instead of working on the turnaround, I had to work on 2 or 3 days. Can I just kick your hip out of the way? When I got that freed up, came back to the turnaround, it was there. And this wasn't that I did something wrong or the horse is bad. This, you know, this is just, it's like maintenance on a car. You know, something just fell out of whack. I just got to work on that, put it all back together. It'll go fine. And mm-hmm. so, you know, one of the best trainers I know, actually, he's been a guest on the show, Craig Johnson, told me that he had a filly at the Futurity 1 year. I think it was the Futurity, some really big reining that she got there and she stopped. She didn't stop well anymore. And this wasn't like she just wasn't sliding hard enough. This was, he'd say the word and she was not stopping at all. And so your instinct, you're at the big show, your instinct would be to drill him in the stops and pull on him and get after him. And he just went back. He said, okay, can I get you in a nice extended trot? Can I just push you gently into the canter? Can we canter 1 or 2 strides, come back down? And instead of running her down and worrying her about it, he just went back to baby colt stuff, fixed mm-hmm. it, and then the stops were magically there again. So this is when people look at me and think, you know, well, he knows how to do this. I don't understand how he could have forgotten or, you know, mm-hmm. I just say that's horse training. This is just the experience of horse training. And when you know that, mm-hmm. you don't get frustrated. You tend to get less frustrated or upset or worried or confused. And it's the same for your horse, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully this little conversation will help a lot of people out there and other clinicians as well, you know, just understand, you know, if we're giving you something that seems a little bit onto the side of what your question was, you know, try to trust that it's a layer that's going to help you bypass a lot of potential frustrations and missteps, because, you know, advancing a horse is a pretty delicate thing. And there's just a lot of instances where you could kind of get some friction going because what we wanted is going to be different than what the horse was ready for, and just being flexible in that and getting better and better at knowing how to take some of those little detours and then come back to the main road, just like you said about Craig there, without, you know, not having to stop. So I really like that. You know, that's pretty much the perfect point I kind of been talking about is, you know, he didn't let all that pressure get to him. Of course, he's Craig Johnson. But, you know, he kind of was able to think his way around it, go back to a couple of fundamentals, slide down to those layers, get the confidence back up, get the horse's focus back up, and then, you know, you're back to the result that you're looking for, and you avoid a lot of potential stress. So, yeah, for me, that's a huge thing that I just, you know, incorporate into my daily work, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a demon horse that's ready to bite your head off, or if it's, you know, the scariest horse in the county, you know, trying to look at those layers, figure out where can I start operating that's going to be the most effective for this horse. And then it's just a progressive thing of just continually trying to get a little bit better, and recognizing when you're hitting plateaus and sticky spots, and moving around and finding fundamentals that are effective at helping you. And I think, you know, that's something I find myself helping people a lot with. And I think the industry, you know, when I work with people who I've never worked with before, I think, you know, that's just getting to be such a more common thought these days. Whereas I remember when I was younger, you know, it was fix it with the result, you know, and just get into so much trouble that way. So I thought that'd be a fun thing to talk about, but I appreciate your insights as well, because it gave me some, you're taking some notes.
All right, cool. But very good, guys. We played right out of time. And of course, you can find James at coolerhorsemanship.com. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
coolerhorsemanship.com is where he can be found. All of his services, schedule, everything's on there. Do you have anything coming up immediately here?
Yeah, we've actually been doing a lot of work on our schedule, and we're getting ready to post all of that here this week. So if we could get a couple more days, that'll all be on our website, but we've got some clinics coming up.
Okay.
And we're excited about getting all that organized.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, James, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Okay, up next we have the producer of the Considering the Horse competition. We have Andrew from Warsaw, Poland. He's going to be joining us today. Okay, we have joining us today Andrew Makacevic from Poland. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I am fine. And how are you, Mary?
I'm good. I hope I got your last name right. I tried very hard.
Perfect. You improve. Very nice. Thank you very much. It's not easy.
Yeah, the pronunciations were a definite stumbling block for me, but I learned French fries, so I was happy I got the word for that. So I was definitely able to eat while I was there. So you've got something really unique and really exciting going on over there. You know, I was really happy to see when I came over to compete how many enthusiasts there are over there for natural horsemanship. And I wanted to ask you how you got into training in this way. What got you started on natural horsemanship?
Well, I believe if someone will come to you and tell you this one is better or this one is better, or let's ride Mercedes or let's ride Ford or anything like that, probably I will not believe. That's something what is typical for us. But you know who tell me? A horse. One horse. Absolutely difficult horse. Standing with foaming outside, frightening or any people coming to him. And I can't find a solution with existing tips from my friends and from other trainers. So I was nearly breakdown, and I said, it should be a way. Aldona, you know Aldona. Aldona told me she was working in this time in Italy, and she called me and said to me, Andrew, there is something what they call natural horsemanship. Would you like to come? So next day I was in aircraft, and so I fly to Milano, to Italy, and first time I see Pirelli team, and I wonder what they were doing with horses. There was no bits, there was no bridle, and I see relaxed horses responding to some cues what I didn't understand for in this moment. So I started, and I request some of the and invite some of the Pirelli instructor to Poland. So, and I manage a first natural horsemanship course in Poland. So people were coming there. Maybe you don't believe, but first time most of Polish horsemen people they see first time halter, rope halter, or lead ropes, or sticks, and they said, "What for it is?" Now you can find them in every shop within 15 years. So world is changing so much. So it helps me. That's what I start to learn from Pirelli system. After that, I was searching in a world. I go to US working for Monty Roberts, and listening to great guys like Richard Winters, like Chris Cox, Craig Cameron, all of them, or my friend from Australia, Steve Halfpenny. So all of these guys tell me something about horse. But I was starving about the knowledge. My horses were changing every day when my knowledge were increased, and I was sure that's the right way. But I met one guy. I think this guy should get a Nobel Prize. This is Dr. Miller, Robert Miller. So spending a lot of time with Dr. Miller and wonderful nights in discussion helped me to understand much, much more and complete my knowledge as I was ready to start my school. That's my way.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, you know, for sure those sound like familiar names in the States, and those are all wonderful people to learn from. So you've started, I was really impressed when I came over that you've started a school, you have a whole training system, you've got a lot of people on your team, and then they're teaching clinics. Is this idea of natural horsemanship, is it popular over there? Were they receptive at first? How's it going over there?
Well, I don't know how it was in U.S., but probably your big guys starting a new idea also needed time to as audience test it and find own way. Same in Poland. In the beginning, people were watching us and saying, oh, come on, what are you doing? Just, you know, walking with a stick and ropes. Horses are for riding, not for playing, okay? So they make jokes about, well, that's something strange and so on. It's not for sport. You know it probably from some resources. But they see the changes in the horses. So especially as I produced a Monty Roberts show in 2004, so more than 7,000 people come there and they see Monty works as different, and I think that's the moment when they start to realize as this is just a different system of training. I don't want to say better or not so good as others, but different, and you know, depend what people like this music or this music. It doesn't matter if we listen to Beethoven or the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
If we like it. I like both, okay? So within a time, people understand more as this is a kind of great technique and way what horses like. So I would say rather, I don't mind if this people like this one or this one, but I always ask myself, is your horse accept what you are doing, or maybe he's accept more on another people or another training he's doing? For a while, I'm happy with this one, what I am doing, and I think my horses are happy. Thank you. Mary, you wrote about that, as my horses are happy, you've seen them, and yes, they are.
Yeah, that for sure. You know, I was really lucky to come to your place and see you work with your horses, and everything I saw was, you know, there was still education, there was still advancement, but everything was very soft and very quiet. So I learned a lot for sure from watching you with horses, and that is something, you know, no matter what you're doing, whether you're wanting to be competitive or just, you know, this is a hobby or you're trail riding, I think that's something everyone should be asking is, you know, does my horse enjoy his job? Is he happy? So I was really, you know, I learned a lot from watching you and your team work, and I enjoyed being able to teach clinics. That was a lot of fun. And so with the considering the horse, so this was the colt starting competition. How did you get the idea for that? When did that start?
Well, as I told you, the natural horsemanship idea grew in Poland, and now it's I wouldn't say tremendous, but relatively big. So everybody knows about my school, about the natural horsemanship great names, world names, and also about different schools, different techniques. I think the world is getting smaller and smaller. So I'm sitting now somewhere in the nowhere. North Poland, training white horses, okay? Four people surround me. One is keeping microphone, another some telephones to keep network to talk to you with the wild surrounding, and we speak to each other, to the audience on another continent. So I think the world is getting smaller and smaller, so people can get information about what is natural horsemanship. There are so many great promoters of this idea, so it's growing in Poland, and it's one time I sit with two of my good friends, and we're discussing, what about as we put something on the market, most, let's say, educational, not as a private school like my, you know, like mine, but let's say more universe. And we find, and I told them, hey, come on, they have so great idea, like Road to the Horse. I've been there as a guest. They do so nice things, showing in the face of the public how to start youngs, how to start colts. I said, yes, but it should be different, because so Poland have a different tradition. There is no cowboys here, okay? we have more warm bloods, okay? That's also different. So we think how to adopt it to Polish market. And we started. First was, as usually, difficult. I know about Road to the Horse start on the streets, somewhere in Texas, Fort Worth probably. And same we've done here in a small riding center. And we see how big interest on the market is. So it's changing every year, as we have to move to the place where you've been, my wonderful place, my friend, Western City. They have very nice venue there, and they serve for us with everything, as you've seen probably how nice they are for us. So we put this event on this place, also in wonderful surrounding in the mountain, and we see how it's growing fast every year. So that's not world class event for a while, I would say, but we host already so many different trainers. This is a sixth edition already. So I say to the public in this year, we survive, everybody. Say, yes, thank you, we survive. And now we are sure we survive, as on next year, I have a list of lectures and we talk to the trainers. It more or less is ready. So it means it's growing interest. It's a bit different than Road to the Horse because, as you know, we present science, we present lectures, we present other animals. Because my point of view, to understand horses, you should understand other animals. You should understand the nature. So that's why we show the lions, we show wild birds and dogs and wolves and other animals, because all of them can help us to understand horses. That's my dream, let's say. And it works.
Yeah, so that was something that I thought was really exciting about the event, was it wasn't just the colt starting, and it wasn't just trainers doing demo with horses. You had so many different animals and ideas, everything from saddle fit to working with sled dogs, which I found was really interesting. And I thought what was really neat was, you know, of course people were watching the colt starting, which is fun and everything, but you had people that just completely filled the bleachers to watch the lectures as well. So the audience there was just fantastic and really eager for knowledge. And
they love you, Mary. They ask me when you are going to be back in Poland.
Oh, you can't have her. You can't have her. We like her too.
Yeah, we like her to have maybe on the white horses. What do you think, Mary? Let's do it together.
For sure. I am all for that. And that so the wild horses, that's something I wanted to bring up too. So I didn't know this, but they have a herd of wild horses in Poland, and you work with those twice a year and to get them adopted out to the public. So tell us a little bit about that and what that's like.
Well, we have the biggest wild horses herd in North Poland. I didn't know it as well. 6 years ago, I got a phone call, and one of the guys asked me, Are you a horse whisperer? I answered, no, I'm not. But I know something about horses. And there was a request, can you help us to show how to break them, how to start them? Because we have over 300. And I said, what? So I go there a few days later, and I see something what wonder me every time when I am there. 360 wonderful animals in one herd on a huge wild area. So I try to show them what is our system in my school, natural school, how we break the horse, how we start the colts. But I said, okay, I can't make a miracle. Sorry, I can't just be a rodeo rider or a cowboy with lasso and give you and bring you a wild stallion and break it. Now they built for me a first round pen. I invite some students from my school and we start a wild horses program. And people love it. Our horse society love it because it's so educational. To watch how they live in the wild, it helps us to understand what are with our puppies, let's say, in the stables. So I started the program. They built three round pens for me. And twice a year, we go there. In the first or 2 days, we round up a part of this herd. Of course, these are not the wild horses. They are feral horses like Mustangs, but we call them wild. They are untouched and they do not see people. And so they to round up them, it's also very, very well, it's something, let's say, with full of adrenaline, sometimes working 10, 12 days in a saddle. To collect some wild stallions and bring them to the place where we can close them, and then we separate them. We leave the young one, 3-4 years old, and after that, my students come and in three round pens parallelly, they work in round pens with starting wild stallions. That's amazing. To let's say, I would say this is kind of university. If you enter the round pen, you have a serious 4 years old stallions, and you are not a worldwide trainer, let's say, but a student. They have to control adrenaline, they have to control emotion, they have to use the techniques what they are teaching my school, or what they have to pass a special levels as they are able to enter and start wild stallions. I'm happy as in my school we push it so much for the safety. Let's say we are famous in our country as there is no accidents at all in our school, even if I have more than 6,000 students. So people start these horses, and we as trainers are on the top of the round pens and trying to help them and to control is everything going well. So I am pleased, and people are pleased from this program. So the next program will start this month, something like within 3 weeks.
Well, where can people? Well, we have the address actually here in the show notes. I don't want to read that out because it's quite a long, but we'll put the website address on our show notes as well as our Facebook page. And we thank you guys so much for joining us. It's been fun to hear about it, and now we have proof that Mary was actually there. And
okay,
she
right. Mary's there.
Oh, did we lose you, Mary?
Mary, are you there?
Oh no. I'm here. Okay. I was getting a little static. Just wanted to wait to jump in. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I think it was a really fun experience for me. And the website's got a lot of great pictures on. It's not in English, but it's not hard to navigate your way around. You can check out the gallery and see pictures of the wild horses and the clinics, and definitely give it a look.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Thank you very much,
right,
Maria. It
you.
Was a pleasure for me to be with you, and I really enjoyed this time. Thank you very much, and hope to see you again.
Well, we're going to have a song for you coming up next. And of course, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn DeGeek here with Mary Kitzmiller. Jen is off today. I wanted to remind everybody that Mary is here the second Thursday of every month. And you can go to horsesinthemorning.com and search Mary Kitzmiller for all of her past episodes. And you can take a listen to them all at once if you'd like. Of course, the easiest way to listen to our show is on our app. Just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network. It's free. It's easy. It's the simplest way to listen. Let's take a break for our song. We'll be right back.
Alabama boy, you are so fine. Where have you been all my life? Hey, hey. Change. You took my breath away when I met you that day. You were laying on the country charm. You shot me a grin and I knew right then you were gonna get my heart. Alabama boy, you are so fine. Where have you been all my life? Hey, hey.
So coming up next, we've got a trainer all the way from England. He was the winner of the Considering the Horse competition over in Poland. We will have Guy Robertson joining us. So Guy's just fresh off of his win over in Poland at the Considering the Horse competition. How are you doing today, Guy?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Mary. It's nice to speak to you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So tell us a little bit. You are in the same boat as me. You've never been to Poland before. How was that experience for you?
I thought it was fantastic. I hadn't really got much of an idea of what Poland was going to be like. I'd done a little bit of traveling around Europe, but I'd never sort of done sort of, you know, Eastern Europe, if you like. And Poland was unreal. It was a beautiful country. The people were really hospitable, really friendly, and you know, they really looked after us, and you know, had a fabulous time.
Yeah, you know, I had the same experience. It was just kind of a breath of fresh air dealing with the people over there. And so you won, which was amazing. How did that feel for you? Was this your first colt starting competition, and how did it feel to win?
It was my second competition. We'd done something a little bit smaller in England. We'd sort of done it over a shorter period of time, and we hadn't left the round pen. It was nice to win. Don't get me wrong, but for me, it was more, you know, it was more about the experience of going and sort of challenging some of my program and you know, just the sort of adventure of it all, really. And I met some great people, and I think that was the thing I took took the most away from. I mean, it's nice to win them and so on, obviously. And I wouldn't say it's not, but it really was the kind of experience which, I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, I have to say I agree. I think being over there was really good fun, and it was neat. Kind of for me, working in Warm Blood was a different experience. So that was certainly a learning experience for me as well.
So you're telling me it wasn't fun to kick Mary's butt?
No. I mean, Mary, she had to cut out the horse. I mean, and I was lucky because I got to draw second because. I she hadn't picked that horse, I'd have picked it. And it was a tough colt. She was a little bit bigger than the other two and a little bit more stroppy than the other two. So she had her work cut out. And I think with these colt starting competitions, if you get a horse that's just sort of willing and trying and, confident to start with, then, you can take it that bit further than, one that's sort of just a little bit kind of troubled with things and, no enjoyment in kicking that, but I don't think that was the case. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I got to tell you, too, that is right, because if you've got the colt that's being a problem, normally you would have 6 months to work those situations out. You've only got 3 days. You don't have time to work through that in a kind, gentle way. You just don't have time to do it. You do what you can, and you get as far as you can, but then... It's all about it still goes back to, doing the right thing by the horse.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think with these colt starting deals, the key thing is you can't really push them too much, too far, because they just won't put up with it. They're not older, broke horses that have sort of got used to taking that kind of pressure. They won't. So, you are limited by what your horse is willing to accept, and you have to go at their speed. And if they're happy to get going and keep trying something new, then that's great. And if they're not, you have to kind of stick where they're at and work from there.
That's a really unique thing. I don't think you can find an experience like this in any other situation in horsemanship. Is, if you're training a colt, you're even just doing a demo where you're training a colt, if you run into a situation, you can just stay in there until you find your way through, and if you're at home, say the colt just had a real, real bad problem with the saddle or with me touching it, I can spend half an hour just working my way through it. And then when you're done, you could just put them away, say, okay, that's fine, we'll come back tomorrow and get a little further. And, even in a demo, you can explain to the audience, this is where this colt is. When you do a competition, obviously, we're not trying to push these things past their limits at all, and you're trying to showcase good horsemanship. But it really makes you think on your toes. It makes you realize, I don't need to get into that situation because then I'll be here all day. So it really makes you think about what's important, what's not, how's my timing, which in turn helps you go home and produce a better horse when you go home. So that's why I do these is it really gets you thinking when you're working with these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You get more adaptable. You get to, you not get set in a set way of doing something. You sort of working from where that horse is and what that horse needs you to do to sort of, get a job done. And I do think there's a lot of benefit to it from a trainer's point of view, it really challenges, your program and what you've got working for you and what you haven't.
Well, that's, anytime I've done either a little competition or anything where there's a time limit, you've got 45 minutes to make a change and get something done. A lot of times I'll show up with the mindset of, I have to work on this and it has to look this way before I feel comfortable progressing. But when you're on the clock and you realize, okay, well, maybe I only need to do half of this, and then it works. You're like, so then I go home and I realize, okay, I am wasting a lot of time and I am a little inefficient here. And it wasn't until, you have to put it out there for everyone to see, there's a clock running, that you finally realize. So it's helped me take a lot of steps forward in my horsemanship, for sure. And so it was, as doing Poland was as much a learning experience for me as I hope it was for everybody watching. So, you know, one thing we heard a lot in Poland, they talked about natural horsemanship. They're really in love with it over there. Tell us a little bit about what you got started on this path. You know, when did you really start doing this and thinking this might be what you want to do with your life?
Well, I played polo cross. I was a polo cross player through kind of pony club and when I was younger. And with that, I sort of traveled a little bit and I ended up in New Zealand and I got around some people that were, you know, handy, were starting colts and had been on some sort of clinics and so on, Ray Hunt clinics, and but been, you know, sort of Buck Brannaman, absorbed some Buck Brannaman stuff and things. And they were using these kind of methods to start horses. And I kind of kept going back over there and I had more opportunities to start colts. And, you know, I'd sort of had carte blanche a little bit as to how I went about doing it. And, you know, I was reading stuff and watching stuff and I was scratching with all these different horses. And it was, you know, it was a great experience because I had loads of horses to work with. So I could go out there and try something new and try something different the whole time. And it wasn't, you know, really like, oh, well, I'm going to start being a natural horsemanship trainer. I was working with polo horses and polo cross horses and, you know, that we were training them to do that job and to sell them. And then when I came back to the UK, it was a case of, well, you know, I've got to make a living and people wanted to send me some horses to start. And I started starting different types of horses for people. And, you know, and as I was doing that, I was constantly trying to, you know, evolve my methods and improve my methods. And, you know, I got the thing from Martin Black's stuff and Ray Hunt's stuff, and you know, that really sort of seemed to fit with what I wanted to be doing, and that's kind of how I tried to model myself on those types of people and what they were doing with their horses and how they were going about doing it. You know, it seemed to fit those horses, and you know, mainly what I was doing was starting horses, and that's pretty much what they're renowned for anyway. So, you know, that's kind of how I kind of went down this route. It was a sort of organic thing rather than thinking, well, I'm going to be a natural horsemanship trainer. That's what I want to do. It sort of, you know, it kind of happened, I guess.
Well, and I have to say, you know, of course, you know, I get invited to do this thing and I'm seeing who's going. So, you know, I did my fair share of cyber stalking and I thought, this guy's from the UK. You know, what could he possibly know about Western horsemanship? And as it turns out, quite a bit. but yeah, I was really kind of pleasantly surprised that we actually share a lot of the same influences, which I thought was pretty neat. And So, you know, you have a really unique style, you know, really soft way with horses, and I can see a lot of your influence in your training. How popular is that kind of riding over in the UK? Are they big into the Western scene, into the sort of, you know, the ranch roping and colt starting? How does that go over there?
Yeah, I mean, not really so much. I mean, obviously the biggest influence is still the you know, show jumping, or I think hunter jumping in the States, and your dressage and eventing, those would be the main disciplines that people were interested in. Although Western riding and I guess natural horsemanship training is becoming more and more popular. There seems to be so much more, and I think we were discussing this a little bit when we were in Poland as well, there seems to be so much more that you can do now with your horses, and the world's that much smaller and information's that much easier to get a hold of in terms of the internet and DVDs that people have got out. So it is definitely becoming more popular over here. Guys like Buck Brannaman, Martin Black, Mark Rashid, and Chris Cox, people like that are coming over to the UK, and people are kind of seeing something different from maybe Monty Roberts and Pirelli, which might have been you know, which have been around for a little bit longer, and they're seeing a bit more diversity and a bit of difference. And I think certainly with the way we're starting their horses, I think they're seeing value in starting them slightly differently too, rather than that traditional mechanical way of starting a horse. Is more, you know, they're looking at some of these methods and certainly some of this groundwork, you know, preparing their horses a little bit better before they start riding.
Guy, I have a question here that came in from one of the listeners, and I was going to ask Mary, but I think I'll ask you both. They said with people that do what you do, Where does your main income come from? Is it the horses that are being left with you for training? So I think what people are always wanting to know is how do you make your living? You know, how, because every girl growing up, right, or some boys, but mostly girls in our audience, want to be a full-time horse person, but they can never quite figure out how to make that happen. So I guess that's, I think that's probably where that question is coming from.
I guess this question's almost in two parts. It's one, how do I make my living? And two, I guess, how would someone go about getting into the industry and doing it professionally, right, full time? From my point of view, I start about 100 horses each year, and I've got a facility here in Yorkshire in England, and we take horses on throughout the year. 12 months of the year, we've got horses to ride and in barns, and that's our sort of bread and butter. That's
so that's what pays, you know, the bills. Sort of
pays the bills, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
On top of that, we do a lot of demonstrations and clinics and lessons, and that's, you know, and that side of the business is growing more and more. And eventually, my hope is that the clinics will surpass the horses in training, so I can spend more time riding my own horses and teaching. And I think, you know, probably people get more benefit from learning how to do it for themselves rather than, you know, having someone do it for them. And that said, you know, it's a great way of continuing to learn. If you've got 100 different horses coming through your barn each year, has 100 different opinions of your program you're getting. And, you know, if I see something or hear something or talk to someone about something, you know, I have, you know, a barn full of horses out there that I can go and practice with, young, raw sorts of horses that, you know, aren't real broken. You can go and really test out those sort of ideas and philosophies on that too. With regards to how you get in, for me, you know, you've got to be really, really clear about, there's a difference between liking riding horses and so on and wanting to do it for a living, in that, you know, when you're doing it for a living, it's your job. It's not as much fun as if you've just got one to ride and you can go and spend all day riding it. You know, you've got to get through those horses. You've got kind of clients to answer to. You've got, you know, a lot of outside pressures from that point of view. And, you know, you've got to get a job done because they're sort of paying you to do it. I think the best thing to do really is apprentice with someone, go and work for someone. You know, even if you're not getting paid, just go and get some experience in a sort of professional barn and make sure that you know you're ready for those sort of long days and 7 days a week and not getting paid a huge amount of money. You know, you're doing it for the love of it, really, and apprentice and learn from those people and really sort of mold yourself you know, into the kind of horseman that you want to be eventually, I guess.
I would say that I would agree with that on all points for sure. And you know, for me, where my income comes from, it's sort of changed over the years. I initially took in horses for training, but I don't train for the public anymore. So it's really coming more from lessons and clinics. I'm just now in the point of my career where I'm actually booking appearances and demos and making income from that. And a lot of where I'll bring in income is actually from selling products, you know, and this isn't necessarily from selling Mary Kitz Miller, you know, accessories with my name plastered all over them. You know, I do have a few of those, but it's really more in the tack that I, you know, from makers that I really like, and I want to share that with people. And then I do the artwork. So that's stuff that I make, and it kind of goes with my whole, you know, sort of kitsch out there, fun, you know, stylish stuff that's sort of country and horse at the same time. So that, you know, having that product, that something that people can walk away with when you go to an event, you know, definitely don't underestimate that. Because I know me, when I go to an expo, when I go to a clinic, I love to come home with something. If it's a t-shirt, if it's a hat, if it's a cool piece of tack, you know, just good, nice working tack. So that also helps, you know, that really helps pay my expenses out there when I go somewhere or, you know, pay for my food while I'm gone. But it also provides so much more. So
what the heck? Pirelli bought a yacht with carrot sticks. I mean,
oh my God. Yeah. Well, I don't have $1 million in carrot sticks I'm selling. Have you seen his booth? Have you seen how many people it takes to set up that behemoth?
I know. It's me
and my mom, you know, and one pulley, you know, or one little cart that we're dragging in. We don't like, so this is a whole other tangent, but with product, what I like to do, everyone and their dog has rope halters. You know, you can go anywhere to anyone and find a nice, nice piece of equipment. So what I like to add to it is I like to have a good piece of working tack, but then I like to have fun with it. So I've got, like, I've got these Makatis that, you know, they're horsehair, they're quality, they're made by a fourth generation braider. Oh, and she makes some wacky colors. So you can't find that everywhere. So I you know, because I've come from the more retail side of things and selling cool pieces of artwork. That's what I think of when I have a booth is something you can't find anywhere. So that actually helps a lot with income. And then on the, you know, how to kind of get into it and make a living, I totally agree with Guy in, I see people who break out on the scene who, you know, are trying to be the next RFD star or whatever, and they have good marketing. Man, it looks so snazzy and sharp. And there'll be a flash in the pan, and then they sort of disappear. And the reason is, in my opinion, because they don't have a good training program to back it up. That's the most important thing. So I totally agree with Guy. Find someone that you really admire. You admire the way they work with horses. You see that they turn out a good horse and they do it consistently, and put in the time with them. And I would say, don't just try to go for the biggest name you can get on your resume. It's actually better if you find someone who's a little bit more quiet and out of the way, because they're not going to have people beating down their door to apply to work for them. They're going to have a few assistants at most, and they depend on you to help them. So they're going to have to teach you and show you what they know in order for you to be useful. I worked at a place once where there were 11 assistants, and I was the bottom of the totem pole. So guess what I got to do for 6 months before I proved myself? I cleaned a lot of stalls. I fed a lot of horses. I saddled a lot of horses, which there's education in that, believe me.
But your 5,000th stall you've cleaned, you've kind of got it, you know?
You've only grinded your teeth a little bit and, you know, mumbled under your breath a few times. Yeah. You know, there was good things about that, but the problem with that, and I learned a lot while I was there, but, I'm bottom of the totem pole. There were five or six people who were way better than me. So no one needed to sit there and teach me anything, because they had guys on their staff who could do the work and do it well. And if you say, well, I don't like it here, not that you would do that on a job, but if you don't like it, really, there's the door. They have a stack of applications on their desk. They don't need you. So I, you know, it works to find someone who's good, you really trust what they do, but who needs you to step up and be good. They need you as an extra person to show horses for them. They need you to give lessons to the non-pro clients. They need you to start all their colts, because they don't have a lot of other people.
That's a really good point, Mary. Would you find it the same way over there, Guy? What she's saying?
Yeah, I think for definite. I think you've got to be prepared to clean out some stalls when you first start. I mean, don't go in there thinking you're going to start riding all their bridle horses and things. You need to go in there with an attitude that you'll do whatever it takes. But I do agree that people kind of start chasing these shooting stars, and, you know, that's probably not the best place to start. And another thing I always look at is look at, you know, where some of these people have come from, who they learned from. Because, you know, you look around at some of these top trainers now, look at who taught them, and that usually gives you a good indication of, you know, who's not just good at doing something, that's good at teaching other people to do something too, and who likes to impart a little bit of knowledge and so on, because that's going to be important. There's no point going and working for someone if they're not going to, you know, help you out a little bit and teach you. You know, you'll work and work and work, and you're not going to get anything from it. And I was lucky enough to work for, you know, a couple of people who you had to work hard, but they also really were invested in trying to help you too. You know, it seemed to be important to them that you did a good job beyond, you know, how it benefited them, more like they wanted you to get ahead. And, you know, I think, to be honest, that's a bit of trial and error too. You know, you're going to have to work for a couple of people and get your head around it. But, you know, ask people to help, ask people for advice, and you're not going to, no one's going to come and give it to you. You've got to go out there and knock some doors down and say, hey, you know, can I come and ride for you for a week, or can I come and clean some stalls out for you a week, or whatever that might be. You know, you've got to be keen.
It's probably, if you're an eventer in England, you're a lower level eventer just coming up through, getting a job in William Fox Pittsburgh immediately is not going to happen. You're gonna have to work your way up through the ranks. Well, we are running out of time,
yeah,
Barry.
But I think this has
been great. I think that it went a direction that we weren't planning on, but it's also important. We have a lot of teenagers that listen to this show, so I'm glad that you got to talk about that.
Yeah, and I don't think. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that kind of stuff. You know, I absolutely agree. You do need to pay your dues. Don't expect, you will not get out without cleaning stalls. It's just, this is going to happen, and it's going to happen for a long time. But for sure, you have to make your own way. You have to make it happen for sure.
Well, Guy, do you have a website?
I do, yeah. GuyRobertsonHorsemanship.co.uk.
Oh, GuyRobertsonHorsemanship.co.uk. Congratulations again on kicking butt there in Poland. And we'll talk to you again soon. Well, that's great. What an international show today. Thank you so much for putting that together. That's fun. I always love having the Europeans on and people from other countries in Australia and New Zealand. It's just so much fun. It's fun to learn about how they do horses and what's different over there.
Oh yeah, and it's really cool to see. You know, like Andrew said, that the world's getting smaller. We have so much access, more access to each other now. So to see a lot of the same influences overseas, but then they are adding their own spin to it. It's just kind of a really fun time.
And Ray Hunt gets mentioned every time, doesn't he? In every country,
yes.
With every person.
Yes,
it is consistent that way. Well, you are leaving when again for Washington, and when can people come out and see you? At the Central Washington State Fair, is that correct?
Yes. So I will be there at the end of September, and I think I'm going to be starting everything around the 25th or the 26th and going through October 4th.
And what will you be doing?
So I'll be doing 3 demonstrations a day.
Wow.
I'm still working out.
They're working you hard.
Yes. Yes, it's going to be. So I'm going to mix it up a little bit. Work a little bit with some outside horses, probably a colt starting demonstration or two. I'm going to have a detailed schedule online soon. I'll be working with my horses, doing some positive reinforcement demos, showing a few tricks, showing some liberty. I'll do a little garrocha performance. So, I mean, 9 days, we got a ton to cover.
And you're going to be driving there with your ponies?
Yes,
well,
it's only 32 hours. Yes,
I was going to say, from Texas, that's a hike.
Just a little bit.
That's a long drive. Well, God bless you for doing that. And we will certainly, I know we have a lot of listeners up there. Hopefully, if you're going out and you see Mary out and about, say hi to her. She'd love to hear from you. So definitely say hi to her if you see her around. Have fun up there in Washington. Are you indoors or outdoors?
I believe I am outdoors.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, it doesn't rain up there at all, so you're fine.
Yeah, it's
no
really
problem.
Fine.
No problem. You'll be fine. And, of course, yeah. You can find Mary at what website?
MaryKitzmiller.com.
And all of her schedule is on there. You can just check out MaryKitzmiller.com or follow her on Facebook, Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship. Is that right? Yeah.
That is right.
Okay, very good. And of course, we will be back here tomorrow. I wanted to mention that you still have today to get your really bad ads in. Get them in today. We have an unbelievable, tremendous prize for you tomorrow. Anybody who heard the interview with Miss Hutton, who was the author of Sergeant Reckless, who we talked to a Friday or two ago, heard that interview. I mean, we were all crying, and it was just, what an unbelievably great book that is, Sergeant Reckless, about the little horse, the little mare who fought in Korea and is the only animal marine ever to be given a rank, and all the way up to staff sergeant. if you want to have that book, she will sign a copy. You'll get an author-signed copy directly to you, and that's the prize we have for Really Bad Ads tomorrow. There are not too many of those around, so you definitely want to make sure that you send in an ad today, and the winner tomorrow will get a signed copy of Sergeant Reckless. I actually won it, so I have to find some ads. Think I can give the win to myself? That won't look bad.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, that won't look bad.
That's completely ethical.
Yeah, that won't look bad at all. But yeah. You want to get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com and put Really Bad Ads in the subject line and copy and paste the entire bad Craigslist ad into the email and send it off. And you only have today to do that. So get it in by the end of the day on Thursday. And of course, we'll be back tomorrow with Jamie and we'll have a Friday show for you. Looking forward to that. Thank you so much, Mary. We appreciate you stopping by.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Take care, everybody. Be safe.